This week, we welcome Marie Kettner, Director of Product at CyberArry, to discuss how to develop your cybersecurity skills. In the leadership and communication section, the dark side of authentic leadership, why CISOs must be students of the business, top IT certifications and degrees to help advance your career, and more. Business Security Weekly starts now.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show where we explore the business of security to improve the security of business. Your trusted source for actionable insights on leadership, communication, and innovation. Get ready for Business Security Week. With over half of enterprise security budgets going towards detection and response in 2020, the challenge is investing in solutions that can migrate and scale with your business. ExtraHop helps security teams spot threats up to 95% faster and respond 60% more efficiently in hybrid and multi-cloud environments with cloud-native network detection and response. Kick the tires in the full product demo at securityweekly.com/ExtraHop. Most breaches are caused by exploiting oversights in basic cybersecurity fundamentals, but complex hybrid multi-cloud infrastructures make cybersecurity hygiene challenging. Red Seal can help. It shows you what's on your network, how it's connected, and the associated risk across public cloud, private cloud, and physical environments. With Red Seal, you'll get control of your cybersecurity fundamentals so you can protect your organization from the inevitable attack vectors and reduce your cyber risk. For more information, visit securityweekly.com/Red Seal. Cyber risk and compliance automation is finally here. Arduous legacy GRC systems cannot support the powerful real-time automation and oversight that organizations require to take risks that matter and compete in today's business climate. CyberSaint ingests data from your existing tech stack to deliver unprecedented patented automation and visibility into enterprise risk and compliance. Don't get left behind. See why the most forward-thinking CISOs and business leaders of Fortune 500 and more partner with CyberSaint. Maximize your cybersecurity program today by visiting securityweekly.com/CyberSaintBSW.
Welcome to Business Security Weekly. This is episode number 194, recorded November 2nd, 2020. Yes, Halloween is behind us. I am your host, Matt Alderman, here in Colorado. Joining me from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island is my first co-host, Mr. Paul Asadorian.
Good to be here, Matt. I'm liking how the pre-show banter and show introduction talked about Halloween and smoking meat and not football.
So far, we're not done yet. Oh. And joining us remotely is my second co-host, Mr. Jason Albuquerque.
Halloween may have ended, but the pile of candy on my dining room table hasn't. So It's getting scary over there. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. And it's scary watching football some days, too. So we'll leave it at that.
Well, at least you guys got a W.
I don't know how. It was a miracle. Would you like to have all of your favorite Security Weekly content at your fingertips? I have a question for one of our illustrious hosts, someone from the Security Weekly team, or wish to hang out with folks at the on our Discord server? Subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher, sign up for our mailing list, and join our Discord server to stay in the loop on all things Security Weekly. Visit securityweekly.com/subscribe. In our webcast on November 5th this week, we'll show you how to build proper metrics and KPIs, learn why you should stop trying to discover and classify data in our webcast on November 12th, and learn how to thwart attackers using deception in our November 19th technical training. Visit securityweekly.com/webcast to see all the webcasts we have coming up, or visit securityweekly.com/on-demand to view all of our previously recorded webcasts. This segment is sponsored by CyberArry. To learn more, please visit securityweekly.com/CyberArry. Marie Kettner is currently director of product at CyberArry. Prior to joining CyberArry, Marie held multiple positions at Straighter Line, including product management and marketing. Marie holds a bachelor's of science degree in new media publishing from Rochester Institute of Technology. Marie, sounds like all great skills to have. Welcome to Business Security Weekly.
Hi, well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we're going to talk about cybersecurity skill sets. And we've been talking about this for the last few weeks on the show. And so this interview is kind of timely for us to kind of dig in a little bit. I mean, Jason has talked a lot about getting more involvement with the in the community to really help drive, skills, help people get into the cybersecurity industry. It's been a topic we've been pretty passionate about on this show. So, it's great to have you on. I want to start with, when we think about the cybersecurity skills gap, are the problems, is it recruiting? Is it development? Is it retention? Is it all the above? Where are we struggling in the industry?
It's all the above. Most organizations are really trying to stay ahead of the game. And so the skill sets do change over time, as do the opportunities for individual employees. The average turnover in the cybersecurity industry, most employees are only at their current job for 18 months or more. And so thinking about bringing someone on with the right skill set and maintaining them and developing them as being an asset of your organization is very much at the forefront of organizations' priorities, so they can stay on top of the risks that they're trying to tackle.
Yeah. Do organizations worry about the retention piece? Is it a huge part? You recruit them, right? You get them on. And then are you worried that in 18 to 24 months, they're going to leave? Or if you have the right programs in place, maybe it doesn't matter?
Yeah, it's a competitive market. So more organizations are actually being forced to hire more junior professionals that do require upskilling. And so that upskilling and onboarding and professional retention and development is actually, it's one of the directions that organizations are going to in order to satisfy those more senior level roles.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Matt. We've talked about it on the show before, building apprenticeship programs, building programs for traditional IT folks who want to move into the cybersecurity arena and really bringing up, building up those programs internally to help groom that. But I think it's our job as executives to build an environment that those folks want to stay, right? So you're investing this time, you're investing, money into training them, you're investing resources into getting them into apprenticeship programs and, having folks that they can shadow. But again, we have to create an environment that makes them want to stay more than 18 months.
I think for a lot of roles, I just want to talk about like the cybersecurity degrees and hiring junior people. And this isn't every role, but I think a lot of roles in cybersecurity benefit from cybersecurity being a minor and having a major be computer science. I'm coaching my nephew. And then one of the things that I'm like, it doesn't matter how you get there. I'm like, but you need a really good mix of skills to start in a lot of the technical positions in cybersecurity. And like, before you can understand how to secure things or break things, you got to understand how things work. So learn how to build software, learn how to build networks, maybe a minor in cybersecurity. I'm like, that's actually a really good thing, because then the rest of the cybersecurity knowledge, you're probably going to do on the job via training like Cyber and similar.
At least we hope so.
Right.
And we deal with customers that are at all different stages in that gamut, right? We deal with organizations that have developed and fostered these entry-level training programs to level up their SOC analysts into level 1, 2, and 3 to try and have kind of that full stack view of cybersecurity analysts on their team and get more people to that value for their clients as they can. And we have others that are just continuing to foster their current team to be able to tackle more and more different organizational needs with the existing resources and trying to just kind of broaden their skill sets to be able to do more or do a targeted security analysis in an area that they haven't touched before.
Right. Now, Cyberary has a pretty broad learning platform. And one of the things I wanted to kind of get into a little bit is, where are some of the big use cases? How are people using Cyberary to start to solve aspects of this skill gap in cybersecurity?
Yeah, we've touched on a couple already. The onboarding use case is one where we see a lot of companies, like I said, fostering these more entry-level professionals into more security analysts. You know, many organizations are struggling to create a structured and consistent process to do that in order to foster that retention. And so they're looking to us to really help out with that pathing. So they come in and they establish, you know, what are the roles on their team that they want to establish some baseline skills for to onboard and make sure they have that minimum requirement to do the job. And so we create custom learning paths for those individuals. So everyone coming on board is at the same level. And then, you know, kind of from there, the career pathing aspect. And so once everyone is baselined, kind of getting into, okay, what's the next level for this individual and what's the next level beyond that? And so creating more of these focused career paths within the organization to let individual employees see their map forward at the organization.
Now, does that curriculum include certification paths as well? Do you
it does.
Have courses? Yeah.
Yeah, so we look at certifications and skills holistically, right? So for any job, you have a variety of skills and a variety of certifications that are industry standard that you need. And so one of the other use cases is that certification prep. So if you want a team or individuals to prepare for their Security Plus or their Net Plus or CISSP or, you know, AZ-900, we create, they can assign out these certification prep courses to them, which gives them all the skills they need to go on to take that certification exam.
Yeah, and I like that when we have a security team or even an extensions of the security team, is that you are able to baseline knowledge and certifications, in my opinion. Certifications are certifying a body of knowledge, not experience. But what it allows me to do is apply those people with the knowledge to get the experience that also not only helps them, but helps the business as well.
Well, right. And that's why they're kind of tried and true in the industry still. I know a lot of organizations are shifting to more of a skills mentality instead of certifications, because that's essentially what certifications are. They're just encompassing a collection of concepts and skills that are required for the job. And so they're just packaged differently, right? And so we think of certifications as skills as kind of the same, and kind of being able to assign out different content to a group or a single individual to help them advance in certain skills.
I think there's rare exceptions to that, to some of the really advanced cybersecurity certifications, which do require, I mean, basically, a lot of times to achieve those, you have to have some real world skills in order to get through, like, probably maybe three tops, you know, that are out there today. Cisco, I think, was pioneer in that, right, to get your CCIE. Like, it's really, me personally, I struggle with just like the book learning in lab. Like, I would need real world experience, I think, if I were to go to take on an advanced certification like that, that requires you sit down in a lab, do stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. One of the other things that CyberAid does offer for those different certifications and skills that do require more of that hands-on experience is we have, you know, browser-based labs that help practice and apply the skills that you may have been taught in a more instructional format in a more real-world experience. And so those range from a variety of, you know, kind of guided step-by-step tutorials to, you know, more of the capture the flag style exercises where you're being asked to go and find a little flag within an exercise.
Yeah, browser-based labs are where it's at too. Mm-hmm. I was actually talking to one of your coworkers, right? And we were talking about that, like just how critical that is. Like I understand building a lab myself is a learning experience, but when you want to acquire those skills, building the lab may not be part of those skills. It's part of your journey to get there and making them available in the browser. I'm happy to see that technology be more ubiquitous.
Yep.
Yeah. And it gives you a level of operational efficiency as an organization, right? Now you're not building these labs from scratch. You have templates, you have things you can put out there quickly and get the end result quickly.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you craft these different programs, right? I mean, there's skills in here, there's certifications in here. Obviously, you're working with the security team, but are you also working with HR? Who else plays a role in crafting these programs to really be successful in an organization?
Yeah, it varies from organization to organization. I will say our preferred model is working with someone who is really a manager at any level and really trying to create a fostered program for their team. So, you know, they want to understand where their team is at in terms of skills and baseline. They have a set objective for this year or this quarter, or just generally for where they need the team to go or an individual to go. And then they're looking to us to kind of put that guidance in between. So if to develop those custom learning paths to help them get to that end state. And so oftentimes we're dealing with, you know, SOC managers and CISOs and HR and a variety of contacts across an organization to facilitate that overall program. It really depends on where the starting point is. You know, we work with learning and development teams in some cases where they're just trying to establish a more predictive training program for the organization as a whole, which is great, right? We want everyone to be thinking about securing the organization at all facets. And so we love being able to work with a multitude of players to really establish that for each individual role of the organization.
Got it. Now, do you also work with the HR teams on, we talked about onboarding a little bit, but I'm thinking about the recruitment process, right? What are the right things to put in the job description? What are the right things to ask for, whether it's education or skills or certifications? Are you working closely with those teams? Because one of the big challenges is, you know, not everybody needs a bachelor's of science degree in computer engineering with a CISSP for an entry-level cybersecurity role, right?
Yeah, I think oftentimes we end up working with the hiring manager and not HR because they're ultimately, you know, they have a certain set of skills and capabilities that they're looking for that team member to have on the job. And it's difficult during the evaluation process to determine if, you know, what someone has on paper is actually what they have in actuality. And so they're helping to set these baseline onboarding plans. I will say, you know, we are trying to partner and work with some HR departments as well, because that is a full circle, right? You got to start from someplace before, you know, someone actually gets hired to facilitate that role. And so we are working with some HR groups to kind of preempt that and helping establish what are those skills needed for this particular role so they can go and recruit and find the right people.
Yeah, and it's a two-way street too, right? Like HR departments shouldn't be asking for 10 years of serverless cloud technology experience. At the same time, someone with 10 years of serverless cloud experience on their resume should throw up a red flag somewhere, right? So,
yeah, we think so.
Now, from an overall management perspective, do you have, and I know this is, you know, these are questions my HR team would ask, right? Do you have an LMS system where we can help manage our you know, the curriculum that our employees have gone through? Can you integrate with LMS systems so that way they can have that data behind the scenes on folks who are taking classes, folks who are passing certifications, taking the certification classes? I know our HR team, and I mean, we're a technology services company that has partners and we're required certain certifications. Yep. Our customers expect us to have certain certifications. So having that ability to show, you know, here's what our employees have gone through from curriculum to certification paths, et cetera, is very important.
Yep. So you can see some of that in our platform. So you can see exactly what your team has trained on or what content they've consumed throughout their duration of time on CyberAid. We also do integrate with an LMS system at an organization. So an example, you know, Degreed is one of these programs that some of our customers use. They use Degreed to create custom curated paths of content across a multitude of providers, not just CyberAid. And they can add CyberAid content to that and also get the reporting data back on it.
Yeah. Awesome.
When we think about the success of having these programs in place, where do your customers really gain that value? I mean, what are you seeing as the end result of crafting these programs and helping the employees grab these skills and these certifications? Any stories that you can share from the success with the customer base?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it comes down to does this training help that business do X, Y, or Z better, right? And so those stories that we like to capture and find is, hey, my analysts are actually spending less time on each task at hand because they're going into those tasks with a higher baseline of training, right? That's the ultimate end game, is this training is meant to help organizations be better at what they're doing. Now that is very hard to draw direct lines to because training programs are just one piece of that pie, right? There's other professional development going on at the organization, and certainly being able to understand the variety of different impacts of that can be tough. I think when thinking about outcomes that we're trying to drive, it comes down to kind of if we prepared someone for a certification, are they getting, you know, an 80% or above on that practice exam? And we can kind of check the box and say, yes, they're ready to go off and take that exam with confidence. Or if they set a training goal for themselves as more of a learning and development program of, hey, we're establishing we need to a minimum of 15 hours of training a month for each employee. Can we, yes, check the box that we're helping satisfy that? And then certainly long game those stories on the analyst performance is ultimately what we want to drive.
Yeah. I mean, continuing education units is a whole separate piece, right?
Yes.
I mean, because all this is skills to get you maybe to a certification path, to get you more hands-on experience, to move you. But now once you get those certifications, now there's a whole bunch of, you know, continuing education units now that you have to continue submit for to keep your certification. That is a whole separate challenge in itself.
It is, and you can earn those credits on Cyberary. So you can prepare for that certification and then maintain those credits by continuing to learn and train on the platform. So each of our courses and learning activities, upon completion, you get that certificate you can share with the certifying body.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting perspective to when I look at someone's resume to look at how they may be continuing their certifications with credits and their work experience, right? Like how much does that overlap? I'm not saying either is a bad thing. You know, they may be continuing a certification, they may be working in a slightly different area, and you can kind of gauge where more of their experience more recently is. Because I think one of the huge criticisms of certification is, well, someone that got it 10 years ago and still puts it on their resume and it still carries weight. You have to look at the whole picture. And those are just two very small data points in the whole picture of a candidate, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I think I froze there for a minute, or somebody froze. It's probably me. nobody's home to consume my internet today, so I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, someone is. A couple times you kind of froze and caught up with yourself there in the video.
Yeah, I was asking about apprenticeship programs. We've talked about them here. You know, one of the ways to see a mature industry is concept of apprenticeship programs. Maria, are you seeing anybody look at apprenticeship programs or trying to build apprenticeship programs leveraging Cyberary and your platform?
We have a variety of different edge cases that we're satisfying. There's a few that come to mind where they are trying to build out these. I wouldn't have gone in calling them apprenticeship programs, but I guess you could call them that, where it's an organization or a group that is really striving to foster the cybersecurity industry and really add more professionals to that. And we do have a variety of organizations on the platform that are setting up their own individual programs to do that, and they're leveraging Cyberary's content and for that training aspect of it.
Got it.
Yeah, and I like that thrown into the mix because, you know, to take a student, for example, and put them in an apprenticeship program with an advanced cybersecurity practitioner, that's a huge time commitment. And I'm not saying don't do that, but you have to be mindful of the time commitment before you play the matchmaker. Yeah. Whereas maybe someone who's worked in IT, and Jason, you told a great story about, you know, the person that worked in IT that wanted to get into cybersecurity, that mentorship you can look at almost in a different light and go, well, that's less time that we'll have to spend in that mentorship because they already have a certain body of knowledge. But knowing that is huge.
Yeah. Well, I think, Cyberary has an entire side of the business that's crafted and derived for individuals, right? So it might not be an apprenticeship program, but it's helping an individual make their way into cybersecurity. And we often find that many professionals are trying to transition from IT to cybersecurity using Cyberary as well. So there's may not be a team constructed to kind of organize and foster that, but individuals are seeking that out themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, the research that I did on Cybrary, I mean, obviously the value is in the talent that you bring to be that instructor, to be that person who can, you know, provide that apprenticeship type instruction. I looked at your list of instructors and I was blown away. I mean, you have CEOs of security companies, you have CISOs, CTOs, you know, information security managers. So I look at that, you know, the wealth of the talent there. I could see this as, you know, giving me some help, some assistance in creating an apprenticeship program where part of that apprenticeship program is taking this curriculum. Not only are you aligned to someone within my organization, within my team, but at the end of the day, you have all of these great instructors at your fingertips to be able to learn from and then take that to the folks on my team and really bounce ideas off of.
Absolutely.
And that content is coming out every single day, Marie says. It's when it's ready, it's on the platform.
Yeah.
Paul, Jason, any additional questions while we have Marie?
Well, I was just going to say that's super critical in today's world. As we know, there's a new Amazon service that's spun up every hour, I feel like. And for us to keep pace, we need a huge, vast library like Cybrary has to be able to come up to speed quickly. And I think everyone has a different use case. For that, I'll, you know, describe mine on some later segments. But briefly, you know, if I need to come up to speed quickly, it's different because I'm a podcast host and it might be for a segment or a project, right? And that's very different from someone else who may be embarking on a larger project. But there's always new technology to learn, really, regardless of either of those two use cases, and having that. And sometimes having shortcuts is nice, too. To go, I just need, like, I get the first part of that training class. I need to start, like, here, because that's where my gap in knowledge, you know, begins. So,
Marie, thank you so much for joining us on Business Security Weekly today.
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you.
To learn more about Cybrary's leading cybersecurity professional development platform, please visit cybrary.it/solve. We'll take a quick break and then cover the leadership and communications articles for this week.
The most at-risk industries like financial, tech, and government agencies use web isolation to keep their networks and users secure. The Silo Web Isolation platform by Authenticate allows users to experience the web in full isolation, eliminating the chance of a web-borne cyber attack. You can interact with malicious files and websites without worry, even if you're working remotely. Authenticate enables anyone, anywhere, on any device to experience the web without risk. See how it works at securityweekly.com/authenticate. As a security leader, Cybrary for Teams was built to make your job easier. Are you struggling to measure your team's skills proficiency, provide critical or relevant role-based training, or translate training investments into meaningful business outcomes? Cybrary for Teams is the industry's number one NIST-aligned DoD 8140 and 8570 compliant certification and skills training platform. 96% of the Fortune 500 have employees training on Cybrary. Cybrary for Teams. Skills development solved. Visit cybrary.it/solved to solve your training problems. DeepWatch provides innovative managed security services that empower organizations to be more resilient against today's evolving cyber threats. DeepWatch offers game-changing capabilities in managed detection and response, managed endpoint detection and response, and vulnerability management, all delivered through a unique squad model, a dedicated group of security experts that works directly with each client. From managed security operations to threat hunting to continuous measurement of security readiness, DeepWatch is advancing the service of managed security. Measure your SecOps maturity for free by visiting securityweekly.com/DeepWatch.
Welcome back to Business Security Weekly. I am your host, Matt Alderman, joined by Paul Asadorian and Jason Albuquerque. Join Amit Barakat, co-founder and CEO of Perimeter 81, and our very own Paul Asadorian for a technical deep dive into the problems inherent in legacy VPN technology. Together, they will explore solutions for the modern workforce and how momentum toward perimeterless architectures helping redefine the future of cybersecurity. Register now by visiting securityweekly.com/perimeter81. Also, Security Weekly, in partnership with Cyber Risk Alliance, is excited to present Security Weekly Unlocked on December 10th, 2020. This one-day virtual event wraps up with the 15th anniversary edition of Paul's Security Weekly live on YouTube. Visit securityweekly.com/unlocked to view the updated agenda and register for free. almost 300 registrants, Paul, for Unlocked, and we're just getting started with our promotions. Yay. It's going to be a fun event.
Absolutely.
A fun event. All right, so let's get into these articles. Now, I start with a pretty interesting article because this one kind of, I didn't know if I fully agreed with it, Jason, when I started reading this.
I mean,
at the bottom, it gets a little better.
I read this article and it set me on fire. I'm going to be 100% honest with you. So if we could ever have this author come in and debate with us, I would love to do that. At the end of the day, the article went through and you know, put being authentic against being fake, I guess you could say, and kind of mashed it together when there's so many different variables in leadership and authenticity and vulnerability that you can't, it's not as black and white as this author makes it. And that's kind of the point that killed me here, right? I mean,
but in a sense, etiquette, I want to play devil's advocate. In a sense, it is. I mean, you make the choice whether or not you're going to be authentic at the risk of basically pissing people off, is kind of what the article was stating, or yeah. You're going to be fake at the risk where people are just going to think you're fake. And I don't know what the right answer is, but I do think that you have a choice. I guess I'm bad at playing devil's advocate because deep down, I agree with you, Jason. Right. But you pick. Like, I think that Steve Jobs purposely chose that he was going to be authentic, that there was nothing fake about it. And you can say whether or not you believe he was a great leader. If you look at the results, mm-hmm. in my opinion, they're certainly there. And then you've got leaders that maybe are, I mean, we probably all work for people who you can kind of tell are faking it in certain things, pretending that they care maybe when they really don't, or pretending to, you know, have a certain persona when you know, maybe you know that person on a personal level and you're like, yeah, they're not like that in real life. But as you said, Jason, I do agree. There's so many more factors in there, and I don't think it's as black and white about being authentic or being fake. I think you have to know how to deal with certain situations, even though that maybe isn't how you personally would deal with it. But even when you deal with things in your personal life, I mean, I try and coach my kids about this. I'm like, sometimes you just got to put on a happy face. And that's not about being authentic or fake. That's just about being smart and being a human being with people, right?
And that's my point, right? What this article did, Paul, is basically say, If you're unwilling to sit back and adhere to social expectations, take into account other people's perspectives, manage the impression that you're putting up in front of people, you know, you're not being authentic. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, seriously. Yes. I mean, as an executive, I always have to know my audience, right?
Yes.
And there's so many different ways I can articulate something, right, and still be authentic, but have the etiquette to do it the right way.
Yeah, no, agreed.
Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
And that's the difference, right? I mean, a level of authenticity doesn't mean that you're just, you have no filter, right? I mean, that's not necessarily authentic either, because, you know, all you're doing is just opening it up to stir the pot, right? To piss people off when you have zero filter. Part of being a good leader and part of being authentic is to have a level of filter that you can have the right conversation with the right audience in the right way.
Yeah. It's about being able to me. You're right. It's about being able to tune it. And some people, I think, have less of an ability to tune it than others, but I think most people try and strike a balance. Mm. If you don't, I also think that's okay, because that ends up, in Steve Jobs' case, becoming the culture of your organization. And if people accept that and want to move forward knowing that that's the way things are and that's part of the culture, that's totally cool as long as you're transparent mm-hmm. about it.
Yeah, yeah, I 100% agree.
He makes this choice at the end, is that if you're not authentic but you're helping the welfare of people, that's okay, versus if you're authentic and incompetent. And I don't think those are the two choices, but that's how exactly. He summarizes at the end.
Yeah, exactly. This article is way too black and white. I mean, there was a point here where I started reading. It was right near the end where he started talking about like Stalin and Mao and all of these, you know, all of these historic leaders who were absolute villains, right? In my mind, and started talking about if they were true to their values, would we have been better off? And it's like, come on. I look at those type of folks in this world, and they had no place in this world because their values were corrupt.
But that's a great point, Jason. It's not about whether you're authentic or fake necessarily, which both of those could have negative connotations. It's more about your intent. And we see that when we talk about 100%. Like hacker stories, for example, where a student breaks into blah, blah, blah. And I'm always of the opinion that the punishment and what happens afterwards really has to dig into the intent of that person. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with a leader. What is their intent? Jobs' intent was to create fantastic, innovative technology. That was his intent. His intent wasn't to hurt people's feelings or, in the case of horrific leaders, you know, kill people in genocides or whatever, right? That's an unfair comparison, in my opinion.
Exactly. It was totally, just, it was off the wall. And again, I would open it up to debate for this author to come on our show any point in time and really talk through this because... Yeah.
But you nailed it. It's about intent.
I look at this as I would hate from one of my young up-and-coming leaders to read this and take it at face value and try to institute this. For me, it's a disservice. And I'm sorry. It just is.
Good job picking this article, Matt. I like it.
Yeah, I did. As soon as I saw it and I started reading it, I'm like, oh, I got to bring this on because I do not agree with this article. And I'm glad you guys did as well. So it's kind of fun.
No, and do you want to know what? These are the types of things we need to talk about, Matt, because it's information out there for the masses to read, and some may take it at face value. And part of our job is not only to bring up articles that are going to, you know, benefit folks from reading them and following them and doing what they say, but it's also to be able to weed out some of the issues that we're seeing out there, right, in the media.
Yeah, and I took a little I took this a little personally because I think I am an authentic leader. I am who I am. Some people love me. Some people hate me. This is the way I've been. And I'm reading this article and going, wait, you're going to punish me for that? I don't get that.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. Agreed. Yeah. So, yeah, great job picking the article because, again, we have to bubble up these type of things too. It's not just articles that we want people to read and follow and you know, take a look at and bring into their leadership style in life. It's the articles of, hey, if you did read this, you may want to stay away from it. Mm.
Yeah, exactly right. These next couple articles are kind of related with CISO transition. I thought this was a very interesting pairing of, hey, departing CISO, here's what you can do to make the onboarding of the new person successful. And hey, new CISO, here's the things you should do when you get on board to make sure you're successful when you come on. And so it's an interesting yin and yang set of articles here on the exiting CISO and the entering CISO.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, again, your reputation will always follow you, and especially in security, never mind IT, but especially in security, very, very tight community, right? And at the end of the day, you have to make sure as a good leader that you have a smooth transition, right? We're not talking about all this crazy politics stuff. We're talking about business and leadership and making sure that organizations are successful that you're leaving, right? And really, it's your duty to make sure that that next person that's in line, who's going to be taking the reins of the responsibility you had, is set up for success the best you can, right? It's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I also think in any job, having a list of things, you know, maybe once you give your notice and doing this before you give notice to say, I know there's things that I need to like finish off before I leave. Having that list and having it be goals that you can achieve during that maybe short time period, maybe not depending on your situation, but a CISO role or any other role, you want to make sure that you're like, I'm going to do my best to get these things done. I think these are achievable. Everything else, I'm going to brief someone on, whether that's the person who's going to replace me or person who's going to hire the person who's going to replace me. These are where I left off, and here's the, you know, kind of transition meeting. I just think that's good etiquette in your career.
Yeah, 100%.
And this isn't just the CISO. I mean, this could be any leadership position, by the way. Yeah, because I remember when Amit came on to Tenable, I did a lot of this. It's like, hey, welcome to Tenable. Let me tell you all the stuff that's going on, right? I mean, it was a good way to get him some of that knowledge so he could take that knowledge and start to, you know, really start to act on it. I mean, any leader stepping into an organization has a gap of knowledge, and it helps for other leaders to educate them and update them so they can be successful when they come into the organization.
Yeah. Now, I do want to talk about 100%. a new CISO because I want to pick your brains and ask a very pointed and specific question on that. And this is where I believe your job should start as a CISO, and that is meeting with the business leaders and discussing their risk tolerance. And my question is, what is your advice for having that conversation? I think it's very, very applicable to, Matt, your story number four, your first 90 days. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the first I guess this is a two-part question. Is it the first conversation you should be having? And number two, how do you have that conversation and extract the risk tolerance from the business leaders?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I don't think it's the first conversation, although you can plant seeds in that first conversation. I think what needs to be done first is that listening, learning, and building the relationship side, right? Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's learning about their business, the processes within their business unit, and how they engage. What's important to them, right? What are they using when they have the seat at the table with the executives as their differentiator? What motivates them? That's a key piece to that, learning their business. And as you start building that relationship, it could take a month or two. It could take a little while. Now you can start planting seeds because you start asking pointed questions about, well, you know, what do you think we should do in this scenario or this situation? And you start teasing it out. I honestly think if I sat down with any of the business unit leaders out of the gate and said, hey, by the way, what's your risk tolerance? They'd go, what do you mean?
Yeah, I know. That's
what are you talking about?
That's what I'm struggling with too, because that's not a great way to lead into it. So like, how do you have that conversation? Let's say you are, for example, 2 months in, how do you have that conversation?
It's scenario based, right? Because again, not every executive is used to managing risk.
Yeah.
You have to know that, right? And it's our job to educate them on, well, this could be a risk. How would you handle a scenario like this? And you only can do that as you're learning their business, what they do on a daily.
But I like that. Yeah. So once you've spent some time learning the business, run through some threat modeling and scenarios and see how they would handle it, is your answer, Jason. I like 100%. I like your answer a lot. Yeah, Matt.
Yeah.
Because I think what's happening here is you're doing some level of assessment of their posture, which is step two in this article.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere in between getting to build the relationship, starting to understand where you are, you start to have these scenarios like, hey, what do you think about, you know, spam email, looking at targeted phishing attacks? What's your tolerance for that? Right? Mm-hmm. Because now you know a couple things. One, you've built a relationship, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you're starting to see some gaps in the security posture. Is that the time, Jason, to start to look at some of these risk tolerance scenarios? Because the next step is to build a strategic plan, which you can't do until you understand risk tolerance.
Exactly. And I think that in your first 2 months, you should understand what the most business critical assets are as well. Mm-hmm. Right? Because, I mean, you should all be on the same. I mean, you're probably all on the same page on that, what the most business critical assets are. Maybe they haven't thought about it that way in every aspect, right? But you all probably have a pretty good understanding of that.
Yeah. I would say use any story and example that you can. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be something that happened within your organization. It can be, hey, this customer suffered this type of an attack. Right. And this is what was affected.
Yeah, that's dangerous. You know, so you don't want to fearmonger. You don't want to fearmonger. But having examples in real
having stories, though, because it brings reality to it. Right. It really does. And it just it makes it real for folks. Right. And having stories, it could be something you saw on the news. It could be a partner. It could be something. Right. And again, it's finding those seeds for conversation that allow you to tease it out. Because you're basically saying you're basically doing that risk assessment and risk tolerance assessment with stories and examples and a little bit more organic than just kind of coming out and having a checklist of things you want to go through.
I would say those stories and examples have to be pertinent to the business assets and the business, right?
Yep,
because
100%.
I think where we fall in the trap is, well, I really want to do more with cybersecurity, and well, Russia just hacked this and had this campaign. It's like,
a relevant story.
Right. It has to be relevant. Yeah,
mm-hmm. It does 100%.
And that's why I brought in the next article, which is why CISOs must be students of the business. Mm-hmm. Right? We've talked about this, Jason, before. And to your point, Paul.
Yes.
Where is the revenue driver? Where are the critical assets that are driving revenue? Because those are part of your risk tolerance conversation at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the key. It's really flipping the mindset from being viewed as a department who is not key to helping drive revenue or differentiation or value add to your customers, and really flipping that conversation to, wait a minute, we do. We do actually add value, right? We do help generate revenue. We can be an organization that can allow for differentiation and conversations with customers, and having those business level conversations about how you're helping finance, right, reduce risk, how you're helping the HR team reduce risk by hiring the right people. Think about those type of things, right? We can be there to help those kind of scenarios and show that we can be revenue generators, or at least understand the processes that generate revenue and how we can reduce risk or bring efficiencies to it.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, this is a great little article. It's not a long read, actually. Mm-hmm. This one was pretty short compared to the other ones. Yeah. This next article on communication is, I thought this was a good article, and here's why. This is actually kind of how we're working today with Cyber Risk Alliance. If I think about it, if things are in bursts, right? Mm-hmm. I was joking the other day, I've got like 5 or 6 jobs, right? Because we're transitioning into a new business. There's a lot of integration work. We still have our day jobs, right? And now we've got all these new kind of integration jobs. And I'm reading this article going, wait a minute, this is actually kind of how I work, because I have to work in bursts, like, because I have to stay focused. Mondays are about 2 podcasts. That's it. That's all I have time for on Mondays. It's Application Security Weekly, Business Security Weekly, make sure these shows are prepped, ready to go. That's my Monday. But then Tuesday, my brain shifts, right?
That's to another set of tasks. The meeting, regular meeting about software as well.
Right. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. That's always fun.
Throw that on your plate.
7:30 in the morning. Yeah. But then on Wednesday, we have these very efficient meetings around certain activities, right? We've got the labs discussion, then we talk about Unlock. But these meetings are very distinct, focused topics where it's like, look, on Wednesdays, we get a lot of stuff done with labs because it's like, okay, I got to prepare for that meeting. Everything's ready to go. We make a lot of decisions and go. Same thing with Unlock, the event, right? It is these little bursts. And this article kind of reinforces that burstiness in this remote setting. It's actually working well for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can say that, you know, from an IT perspective and a security team perspective, quite a while back, we started following more of like that scrum mentality, right? And I think that's kind of it, where, you know, the teams will get on the phone for 20 minutes, a half an hour, and just kind of bang out the things that they need to get done strategically together. Right. And then kind of go off in their pods and get stuff done, but then revisit it when they need to have that focused, collaboration with the rest of the team. But we're not killing ourselves with just meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting. They're very targeted. They're very focused. They have, you know, they have outcomes that need to come out of it and homework, right, that you come back to the next time you guys meet.
This is another tunable thing that I've done over the years. Do you have one big long meeting or once a week, or do you have a 10-minute meeting every day? I tend to find that the answer is somewhere in between. And that's kind of where we've ended up with, is either a shorter meeting once a week or a short meeting twice a week, or 3 times a week maybe. But then I find if it's every day, there's just not enough
to
talk about, and it gets to be too much. So I've kind of tuned the scrum somewhere in between where, for example, our software scrum is twice a week for half an hour. And that seems to be time-wise and cadence-wise working really well. However, that's going to be different depending on what the topic of the meeting is, the team, and what's happening at the time. And you have to make your team aware and yourself aware that you might need to change that.
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of factors, right? And many times the teams will check themselves for what they want that frequency to be, right? Because at the end of the day, you know, we want to make sure that we have enough window for them to get the homework done, but we also want to make sure that they're getting on the phone and staying accountable to each other. So it's finding the happy medium. And sometimes the teams will decide maybe we should meet every other day for the first couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And then after that, we start meeting, you know, twice a week, once a week, whatever the case may be.
I think where I'm transitioning.
They find their good cadence. They find their balance.
Agreed. And I think there's also, once you get going on a particular project or subject, an ability to bring in other people that don't normally attend the meeting. So rather than having a separate meeting, I'm leaning towards, let's bring in people once or twice a month to this regular meeting to get a different perspective, to keep the regular meeting, keep it moving
forward.
Agreed.
Bring in some subject matter experts or stakeholders. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, different stakeholders. Yeah, is where I'm leaning towards, actually.
Yeah, and it seems to be working because we are doing a lot of transition over these past couple months. So it's like, my meeting schedule went through the roof. But if we're doing them in consolidated bursts, it's actually a lot easier to wrap your head around and keep everybody synchronized, which I think is hard when you have large chunks of your organization not meeting on a daily basis or having the ability to meet face-to-face in this environment.
And the other thing I would say, too, is just make sure that your teams have the ability to schedule focus time, because that's their, you know, they could be always on for weeks and weeks and weeks. And if you're not making sure they're scheduling focus time, it's literally going to, you know, they're going to feel like a manufacturing firm. So for me, it's in the beauty of, like, you know, the M365 suite is now you can start forcing focus time into your calendar, which I think is great. You know, I promote that with my team. Get that focus time in there so you can disconnect from the meeting overload and really focus on some strategy or develop ideas or innovate.
Or write blog post articles or abstracts for webcasts or
Right. But you got to force it in your calendar because you will become overwhelmed with the whirlwind. You'll let the day to day, you know, take over, and you can't let that happen. Right. So you have to force that focus time into your calendar. Very important.
Absolutely. Yep. This last article, we just did a great session with Cybrary. Happened to be this article at the same time. You know, what are some of the top IT certifications? They talk here about degree programs as well. I think it's a great summary of the different types of certifications that people are looking for. Sure. And then you've got somebody like Cybrary who's offering a platform that allows you to prep for some of these certification exams.
Yeah, I think they did a good job of kind of summarizing some of the need that's out there today, the certifications that are probably in job descriptions out there on the internet, right? But again, it's you know, a lot of it's dependent. We talked about it in the last segment, right? A lot of it's dependent on what the organization needs. I mean, from an IT services perspective, we're going to look for the CCIEs, right? We're going to look for folks who may be, you know, certified in Fortinet or something like that, because again, IT services and managed services, we have different needs. So, you know, it depends, but this is a good kind of list of certifications that that the industry needs right now.
Yeah, I thought it was a good summary as well. I think I did pass my CCNA at one time. I think it's probably expired, but I never had enough hands-on experience to go after the CCIE. So, hats off to anybody that goes through that certification, because I saw a couple guys go through it in my career.
Let me tell you, we have quite a few of them here at Carousel, and we have some of the OGs, like the original folks who ended up having to go to like Norway to go test when they only did it one place in the world every year. So so we have some of those OG CCIEs on staff here.
There you go. But it's a good list if you want to know how to get into the industries, different certifications to look at, or for your career pathing. They're here. Cybrary obviously has a platform to help you get there. Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for joining me today. Thank you everyone for watching and listening. And we'll see you next week on Business Security Weekly.